Complex. 1460
WVOX. Stay tuned now on 1460 WVOX for The Ballot Box with your hosts Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin. The Ballot Box is a monthly program brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Now, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to The Ballot Box on this beautiful Wednesday morning. I'm Tamar Tate and I'm joined by my co-host Nina Lubin. And we're coming to you on behalf of the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle, courtesy of WVOX 1460 AM. And of course, our talented sound engineer, Gerald Bell. How are you today, Nina?
I'm fine, Tamar. Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, listeners. Leaving the house today, as VOX weather just told us, we were in our 20s degrees outside. And at the very foot of my driveway in the ground cover, there was this one tiny, brilliant blue-purple vinca, that little tiny early spring harbinger. And it just made me smile. And I'm still smiling.
Well, all's I'm glad good. You were seeing it not covered by snow.
Correct.
It's actually the Ides of March today.
I know.
You know, yeah. Famous day. Today we have a really wonderful show planned, but before we get to our guest, I just want to invite all our listeners. On Friday, WVOX is going to be broadcasting in honor and memory of William O'Shaughnessy. They're going to have a St. Patrick's Day live broadcast from the Mirage Restaurant and Cafe at 690 North Avenue across from Iona College. Going to be great food, easy parking. Come join your neighbors, the show hosts, and the VOX staff as we honor, remember, and salute Bill O'Shaughnessy.
Day and location once more?
It's Friday, March 17th, and we will be there from noon till 5 p.m. So come out and join us.
Thank you. We are honored today to play hostesses to New York State Senator Shelley Mayer. Senator Mayer has spent her career as an advocate for New Yorkers. She was elected to the New York State Senate to represent the 37th Senate District in an April 2018 special election. And she was subsequently reelected in November 2018 and 2020. Prior to her time in the state Senate, she served in the state assembly for 6 years, a career path that has provided her with a first-person view into the workings of both New York state legislative bodies. Additionally, she was an assistant attorney general under Bob Abrams, serving in, among other positions, as chief of the Westchester Civil Rights Bureau. And Senator Mayer has wrangled with life in the private sector as well as an officer of Continuum Health Partners, which later merged into what is today the Mount Sinai Health System. Tamar and I are delighted that she has found the time to visit with us this morning. Welcome, State Senator Shelley Mayer, and good morning.
Thank you so much, Nina and Tamar. It's a pleasure to be on with you this morning from Albany. And thank you for having me on the show. Everyone calls me Shelley, by the way, not Senator. So
thank you. Okay, Shelley, we'd like to jump right in with a quick background primer question. Can you give us a sense of the municipalities that are covered within the 37th Senate District?
Right. Well, I'm happy to, and as maybe your listeners know, after the 2020 census, the lines were redrawn, and then we had a complicated court case. And as a result, the district now goes from Yonkers, where I happen to live, in northeast Yonkers. It's only a small portion of Yonkers now, through Eastchester, including Tuckahoe and Bronxville, the village of Scarsdale, which is now in the city of New Rochelle. It's really the north side of New Rochelle. I no longer represent the south side, so basically from about City Hall going north, and then the whole Sound Shore, Mamaroneck, Rye, City of Rye, Village of Larchmont, Portchester, Rye Brook, trying to think of every other community there. I now have the whole city of White Plains, the town of North Castle, and then all the way at the top, the town of Pound Ridge, which is just the way redistricting works. So the district is similar but slightly different to what I had previously. This is a seat that George Latimer had when he served in the Senate until he became county executive. Then I ran for the seat after he became county executive. So it's really most of the eastern side of Westchester County.
Okay, thank you.
About 325,000 people.
Shelley, your district is so socioeconomically diverse. I'm wondering, how do you go about prioritizing the varied needs and the interests for legislative action?
I'm very glad you asked that, because that is a priority for me. One is, as you mentioned, I spent 6 years in the Assembly, and I only represented Yonkers, probably the most diverse community in Westchester. So I always believe in spending time listening to people in their lives and what they think is important. So whether it's going to a scout ceremony, a community meeting, a church event or a temple event, government meetings where people have a chance to speak, and then obviously meeting personally or through Zoom with pretty much anyone in the community that wants to participate or have a view. So I try to not say no to meeting with anyone, to going to anything. I do my best to keep up with George Latimer and going to as many events as I can, although we're up here a good deal of the time. And I think it is very important not ever to lose sight that your job is to serve people, and not necessarily people in power or people who have a voice, but people who have a problem and hope that government will help solve the problem, but they may not have figured out the path forward. So I also have a very strong constituent services operation. I did during COVID, and I continue to do that. And I view it as my responsibility to treat every person respectfully and do my best to help them regardless of their circumstance. So I view myself as on the ground and hearing what the issues are and then trying to translate them into legislative action.
What are the main issues these days? I mean, I imagine things have changed a bit since COVID impacted the district, but what trends are you seeing?
Well, as you may know, I'm quite focused on the challenges of our utility rate system, and particularly Con Ed rate hikes, particularly bills since January. But I've been on a tear about this for quite a long time. So the fact that these Con Ed bills have gone up so substantially, even though people have tried to reduce usage and it wasn't a particularly cold winter, is a source of frustration for me. I have a number of bills dealing with Con Ed's rate setting, as well as I continue to weigh in against their rate increases, ask for them to change policies about late payments. So that's certainly one issue that's very important regionally. Another issue that has been quite important because the governor proposed it in her executive budget was what she called the housing compact, which would set 3% growth goals for every community in our, basically within 15 miles of the Bronx, and give the state ultimately the ability to override local zoning in an effort to achieve greater housing growth, as well as impose very high standards of growth near train stations. I'm very focused on the shortage of affordable housing throughout Westchester. It's a real problem for people working full-time, earning minimum wage, but I don't think the governor's plan was well designed, and I'm hopeful that we don't go down that path, but that I've heard certainly a good deal about that in the district. Obviously, I'm the chair of the Senate Education Committee, so not only do I hear from schools in our district, parents in our district, teachers and administrators and school board members. I'm focused on school policy statewide. That's my responsibility. And so I'm very engaged in understanding the challenges of every school district that I serve, as well as those that go beyond my district.
Thank you, Shelley. I'm going to pause for a minute because tomorrow and I already have a couple of questions on items that you've just covered, your priorities. As far as the Con Ed rate increases, I believe that there is a webinar that you will be participating in tomorrow. Yes. Did I get that right? Would you explain a little bit about that for our listeners?
Sure. Well, I think one of the challenges for people who just get a bill is what am I supposed to do, and is there anything I can do to, is there any offset I can get or any benefit I can get? So tomorrow night we are having a webinar from 5 to 6:30. If you go on my page, either my Facebook page or my New York State Senate page, you can sign up. And we're going to have with us Pope, as well as Sustainable Westchester. Pope is the Public Utility Law Project. They're the leading advocates on behalf of consumers in the space.
Okay.
So
Shelley,
music.
Yes, we're coming up on a break, and we will return when we get back on the other side.
Let's return now to The Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Senator Shelley Mayer, who before the break was talking about her vocal opposition to Con Ed rate increases and tomorrow's webinar on this subject. Shelley, were there... we were sorry to cut you off. Are there additional information about the webinar?
No, people should pre-register so that we can give everybody all the information. And again, if you go to the New York State Senate and look for my page, Shelley Mayer, you will have the opportunity to sign up and get all the information. I think one of the things we want to do is make sure we answer people's questions about what they can do with respect to their own bill. And then also some of these policy work that we're doing, which doesn't fix the problem of your bill being too high, but these are the challenges that I need to undertake and continue to be very aggressive about.
Thank you for the information. It's terrific that there is a place for citizens to go for education and to have their questions answered and to have officials listening. Thank you.
Instead of just fuming every time you get the bill.
Yes, exactly. This is our responsibility. And, you know, the League, I have to say, over the course of the years that I've been involved in public life, the League has been very much in the forefront of making sure that elected officials hear directly from their constituents. So I very much respect that, and I try to be in that tradition.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. And one of the other issues you mentioned when you were discussing your priorities was housing. And in her State of the State address, Governor Hochul, she unveiled the New York Housing Compact, which you referred to. And from my reading, it looks to be a pretty ambitious proposal. She wants to create 800,000 new units of housing over the next decade. I saw that the Westchester Municipal Officials Association Subcommittee on Housing, they fired off a letter to the governor recently. They were pushing back on the proposal, and you've voiced your own objections to it. I'm wondering how you anticipate this plan right now in its current form would impact the 37th Senate District, and what form would it have to take for you to support it?
Well, I just want to backtrack a little in the context of where we are here in Albany. So yesterday, both the Senate and the Assembly released what's called their One House budgets. These are responses to the governor's proposals, and we are going to vote on those tomorrow in each House. And the Senate One House budget resolution, as the Assembly's, the Senate certainly modifies the governor's proposal, and I hope we come down in a proposal that reflects our priorities. So instead of mandating, we create incentives for municipalities to continue to build additional units, particularly affordable units, and address the infrastructure needs of their communities and have much more community and governmental input from the ground up. Again, as I mentioned, my focus is on the thousands of people who work and live in Westchester who live largely in rental housing and cannot find affordable rental housing, you know, in the communities they want to live in, including people that have sold their houses and can't afford the property tax, or there are people who whose kids want to come back and live in this community and can't afford it. Many of them are looking for affordable rental housing, and her proposal doesn't address that. So our response from the Senate is to say, don't make it a mandate that overrides local zoning. Make it an incentive to get municipalities to invest in building more housing, particularly affordable housing, and in my mind, particularly affordable rental housing, or other creative things like the city of New Rochelle, which has encouraged first-time homebuyers to buy houses by helping to supplement the down payment for some small group of people so that they can actually buy a house that is affordable under their income to pay the mortgage. So our rejection of her, what I consider a heavy-handed approach that did not involve speaking to local officials and local communities, I think is a smarter way to go, and a way that reflects the value of, yes, we need more housing, but we're not going to tell Albany from the top down, this is how you must do it. And, you know, many communities are building housing. I mean, certainly New Rochelle has built a great deal of housing, some of it affordable. Some of the other communities I represent have done the same and want to continue to do the same. So let's give them the green light. Let's not cast every suburban community as a sort of has a line in the sand against additional housing that changes one family housing zoning. I think that we need a much more flexible approach. That's what I've supported. I'm glad the Senate's one house resolution reflects that. The Assembly is in a similar, slightly different bent, and in the next few weeks there'll be the negotiation with the governor to get to the final budget language that has to be voted on by the end of March.
Well, when you talk about incentives, what kind of incentives are you envisioning?
Well, the governor put in a certain amount of money as incentives. For example, I represent several communities, many, including New Rochelle, that were devastated by Ida. In order to have more housing, they need to invest in upgrading their sewer system, upgrading their water system, making sure that they have all of the infrastructure that is required in order to expand the amount of housing. I have a community I represent that has no access to water. Their water comes from Connecticut in Pound Ridge. They don't have the ability to build additional housing because they don't have the water infrastructure. So that's part of the incentive. And the other thing is to incentivize developers to make the housing affordable. Because developers will continue, in my opinion, to build market-rate housing, and more power to them. That doesn't solve some of the problems that Westchester has, which is that, again, affordable rental housing is extremely hard to come by. So if we can offset some of the costs of developers to set aside some of this housing to be affordable, I'm all for that, because that is consistent with the governor's plan and I think the legislature's idea that we need more housing. So I think there's a path to be hewed here. I think it's going to take some work to get there, but I'm very pleased with where the Senate came out, and I hope that we can move closer to the Senate's proposal as we move ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Turning a little bit, digging a little bit deeper into the budget that has been the proposed budget for New York fiscal year 2024. Shelley, it's big. It's a lot of big numbers. It's a lot of big numbers.
Yes.
$227 billion. It addresses different needs, and we will come back after this break and ask you specifically about those needs. Thanks.
Let's return now to The Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. Again, we are speaking with New York State Senator Shelley Mayer, and we were about to, before the break, take a deep dive into Governor Hochul's proposed budget. But before we do that, I just want to mention one of our callers, Mitch, called in, and he wanted us to let people know that with regard to our conversation on Con Ed, Sustainable Westchester is going to be holding a meeting tomorrow from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on how to save on your electric bill. And that will be held at 40 Division Street in New Rochelle. Again, that's from 6 to 8 p.m. at 40 Division Street. And now let's wade into that budget.
The big overall number, $227 billion, includes, of course, many allocations. And just to name a few for our listeners, this includes a $1 billion plan to address mental health, a $337 million investment to end gun violence and protect public safety, a $5.5 billion investment toward energy affordability and clean energy, a $7.6 billion four-year investment for childcare, and a $1 billion investment for asylum seekers to receive health care and shelter. And of course, these items are among other proposed allocations. So, Shelley, as Senator Mayor, are there any items that you feel especially strongly about? And part two, on the other hand, are there expenditures that you believe should have made it into the proposed budget but did not?
Well, let me speak first about, you know, what is my priority and my responsibility as chair of the Senate Education Committee. And education is probably the biggest segment of the state's expenditures, largely state money, not passed through of federal money. And the reason why there's so much spent on education is in part because there was a lawsuit brought about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, that resulted in a change in the way all public schools are funded by the state of New York. Schools get some of their money from property tax, sometimes more than 50%, and they get some money from the state. And that amount from the state is determined by a variety of factors that are supposed to express the need of the district, both the wealth, the property wealth of the district, so you can figure out how much property taxes are appropriate, as well as the needs of the students, their own poverty, their own special needs. That formula, called the Foundation Aid formula, that was adopted in 2007, was never paid to schools. We have fought very hard and been successful in getting the governors, both Governor Cuomo and Governor Hochul, to agree that this money was owed, and this year is the third tranche or third section of what was owed to the school district. So this year, the big chunk of education money goes to every public school in the state, including the city of New York, for money that was owed. And those that were not owed money also would benefit by an additional 3% bump up in what they get from the state. In part, this is to what they are owed, as I mentioned, and what many schools were unable to do because they didn't have the money they were owed. And also, this somewhat offsets the pressure on districts to continue to raise property taxes, which is really a very, very unacceptable way to continue to fund our schools because people can't afford to live in our community. So in the context of school funding, without getting too much in the weeds, one thing we are supporting is universal school lunch, which you may remember during COVID, there were breakfast and lunch for every student, not sort of the students in need went on one line and the students who didn't need went on another line. It was an effort to equalize and have school lunch for every child. We are putting that back in the budget. We believe that every school should provide breakfast and lunch. And there is federal money on the table. We should take it. And then we're going to supplement it, hopefully, with the state money. So there's a number of other things we've done, including expanding full-day pre-K for four-year-olds in as many districts as possible and making sure they have the money to do it. It's extremely important both for children and for families, another thing we learned during COVID. So in the education space, which I'm very focused on, we're doing our best to make sure that schools have what they need, and at the same time that schools do as well for these students as they should, and that students, they were paying a lot, we want students to come out well-prepared to enter the world, to go to college or to go to work, whatever they choose to do, and that we deal with their mental health and other social and emotional needs they have, particularly after COVID.
So, Shelley, is there a rough and round number for how many dollars of the proposed budget are going to education in the state, covering all of these bases?
Yes, the amount of state aid is about $4 billion, I believe, overall, which is, you know, a very significant chunk of change, shall we say. And we are going to, there's some areas where we are adding to it. There's some areas where we're disagreeing with the governor's priorities. But on balance, the governor had a very good start on school funding, both public and there's some things we do for non-public schools as well, which are part of the budget. So I think that is good. Obviously, if you don't know, we disagreed with her efforts to lift the charter cap in New York City. We thought that was unnecessary, and I hope that that does not go through.
You know, as Nina pointed out, we're talking big, big numbers here. And,
yes.
You know, between the budget, the rising property taxes, over the past few years, the state of New York has just been experiencing a great deal of out-migration. I think everyone knows someone who's moved to Florida by this point. Do you think a budget this big is exacerbating issues like affordability that are pushing New Yorkers to leave?
Well, one, let's start with what happened in the 2020 census. Westchester grew, did not shrink. It grew to over a million for the first time. There is some out-migration, but it's actually largely upstate and not so much downstate. People still are moving to New York City, and we need people to continue to believe that New York City and its suburbs are places worth moving to. Do we have probably some out-migration as a result of things? Yes, but we always did. And at the same time, I don't think the evidence is overwhelming that people are moving because of changes at the state level. There's no question that high property taxes in all of our downstate communities are a tremendous challenge for many people, particularly seniors, people on fixed incomes, people who are working full-time and not earning very much. So we have to deal with this property tax burden, in my opinion, and we can't forever increase the cost of everything and lay it on property taxpayers. But I'm sure, yes, we all know someone who has moved to Florida, but we also may know someone who has moved from New York City to Westchester in COVID, and I bet we know a lot of those people. I have a lot of them in my district. And they're very happy to be moving here. So I don't want to overstate the out-migration. The state had a good year financially. It is not like the state is facing a budget deficit this year. There was actually more money than anticipated, in part because of people spending money during COVID and the economy coming back in some respects. So I don't think we should overgeneralize the financial circumstances of the state.
Okay, we will not overgeneralize Tamara and I anymore. The circumstance, and we're delighted to make that change in communications, and hope all the positives come to pass. Thank you. Totally switching gears now, just for a minute. You will be joining the Senate Judiciary Committee for the 2023-24 session. Congratulations. I think we know that New York needs to fill a judicial vacancy in the state's highest court, somewhat of a controversy last couple of months. Can you give us an update on what's happening judiciary-wise and with that vacancy? After the break.
Okay.
Time whizzes by. Thank you.
Let's return now to the Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. We have just asked State Senator Shelley Mayer about the Senate Judiciary Committee on which she will be serving this session in connection with vacancies on the court. Shelley, you there? Oh, okay.
Oh, we lost Senator Mayer. Okay.
She's back.
Great. Okay.
Okay. Shelley, moving right in. That's okay. We're delighted you're back. We're moving into the Senate.
Can I interrupt for a minute?
Of course.
I went back and looked at the total education funding is $31 billion in the governor's proposed budget. That's why it's such a huge share of the
That is huge. Okay. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay.
My question pertained to the Senate Judiciary Committee and the status of judicial vacancies or the status of any other outstanding items. Can you update us?
Sure. I did ask to be on the Judiciary Committee of the Majority Leader long before the governor proposed to fill a vacancy in the Court of Appeals when Chief Judge DeFiore stepped down. That created a vacancy. Before that, I asked because as a lawyer and as someone who cares a lot about how the courts operate, I wanted to make sure my voice was heard on that committee. And I was able to do it because a redistricting took Yonkers Raceway out of my district, so I no longer served on the racing committee. In any event, the governor proposed, after a process that's set forth in the Constitution, a candidate, Presiding Justice LaSalle from the Appellate Division, to be the Chief Judge on the Court of Appeals. I participated both in the hearing of the Judiciary Committee. I met with him personally in my office in Portchester. I read his decisions and spoke with several law professors and others, and decided with no ill will towards him, he's a very accomplished a lawyer and judge, that he was not the right candidate from my perspective for the Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals. We did have a hearing. In the hearing, I had COVID, but I was able to vote remotely. I voted against his nomination, and the nomination did not proceed. Thereafter, the Senate was sued, or some of us who voted that way were sued by one of our colleagues in the Senate, one of the Republican members, who said that this kind of nomination, under his reading of the Constitution, had to go to the full Senate for a vote, as opposed to just the Judiciary Committee, which I have to say, having been the counsel here, has been the traditional way that the rules have been interpreted. Prior to the court hearing that case, and in deference to trying to resolve this issue once and for all, we did have a full vote of the full Senate on the nomination. The nomination did not proceed. He did not get enough votes to be confirmed by the Senate. And now the governor has opened the process up to other candidates. They will; those who are interested will go through a vetting process, and she will nominate another candidate. I hope that it's soon. I hope it's someone that we can come to consensus with. I think many of my constituents felt, particularly after the decisions of the United States Supreme Court and, frankly, some of the New York State Court of Appeals, New York's highest court, that these consequences, which people sort of minimized previously, had huge impacts both on our constitutional rights and on the way our state and country operate, and they wanted to pay more attention to judges. I got literally hundreds of emails from my district alone urging me to vote no on Justice LaSalle. I don't go exclusively by that. I made my own judgment. But to show the intensity of feeling about a chief judge candidate, which has never happened before, people really felt like they wanted to make sure their voices were heard in what kind of candidate was selected. And I had a number of specific reasons, which I articulated why I voted against the judge, and I look forward to voting for a judge so that we can have the full complement of judges on the Court of Appeals.
Is there any sense of a timeline? Are we talking weeks, months, a year?
I hope it's quick. The process has been closed.
Okay.
I understand that additional applicants have submitted their names, as well as some who were on the original list. The committee will review, and I'm hopeful that certainly before the end of session, which goes through the beginning of June, we will have a candidate and we can confirm that person.
So you're very busy straddling two committees at the moment.
I'm on about six committees.
I was going to add at least.
So putting on your chair of the Senate Education Committee hat for the moment, I just want to get back to that. You said it was $31 billion in the budget mm-hmm. for education. And among the things you mentioned were meals for students. And we had a caller who questioned why this is the responsibility of the state. They seemed to indicate that they felt this was a parental duty, not a public duty. And what would be your response to that?
I respect that opinion. We have a lot of families who either, for whatever reasons, cannot afford to pay for lunch or cannot afford to send the lunch. And at the same time, we have a responsibility to truly educate these children. And I think you'll find the vast majority of educators, people who stand in the classroom with kids, know that it makes a huge difference whether a child has eaten. And we all know that. That's just a sort of regular life that we know eating allows you to participate more fully in the process of learning and paying attention. And unfortunately, and this goes to the housing issue, you know, Westchester has families that literally are online every week to our food pantries, an increasing number. I was just at another food pantry where the number, ironically, has increased since sort of COVID has receded, who don't have enough money for food for their kids or to pay for a school lunch. And so while, yes, it might have been that way in the days that I went to school, but the world has changed, and we did have a federal pot of money to pay for this school lunch. It was not renewed, unfortunately, even though Senator Schumer tried his best. It really belongs to the federal government. They already offset some of the cost of school meals. They didn't offset enough of it, and we are filling in that gap.
As our sound engineer just commented, it takes a village. You had also mentioned as part of that budget, with a lens on education, that there will be funding for improvement of mental health resources in the schools. I know last year Governor Hochul said that up to $50 million would be made available to eligible school districts for that purpose. How much of that will benefit the 37th Senate District? And do you have any knowledge about or say in how these funds are going to be spent?
Well, let me first say that I'm extremely frustrated that last year's money is only now, a year later, beginning to get out the door. This is one of the most frustrating things in the state government, is that we fight for this money, you know, and we have to have a balanced budget, and we have to have an on-time budget, and we have to be responsible. But we fight for the priorities, and then the money doesn't flow. And that is a real structural problem that is, in my opinion, quite unacceptable. We have a new budget director of the state, and I'm hopeful he can fix that. That money was set to a competitive RFP, or request for proposals, which was targeted at high-needs districts. Probably New Rochelle would be eligible. I think that is not ideal. Even in so-called low-need districts, our more affluent districts, the mental health needs of our students, particularly post-COVID, are equally real and equally legitimate. You know, it doesn't mean that because you go to school in Bronxville, you're not having a substantial challenge, some students, dealing with coming back to school in person and having lost about 2 years of in-person learning or some subset of that. So I thought the pool should be broadened. I would like to see it not be competitive, but I understand there's not enough money to go around. But I thought it should be included. We were able to get it expanded to include BOCES. That was an effort to broaden the pool of applicants. So that money is just beginning to go out. And there was also money that I fought for prior to COVID as I went around the state and talked to superintendents who told me mental health was number one, where there was a significant pot of money that is also just beginning to get out the door. I'm hopeful that it will benefit many schools in the 37th Senate District, including hopefully New Rochelle, certainly some of these larger districts that have the greatest need, Portchester, Yonkers, and White Plains. But that's really, in my opinion, not the right way to do it. And so I would prefer an approach that does not limit it to districts that are simply deemed high need.
Understood. Thank you. Going to, in our last 3 minutes here, switching gears to a separate issue and one that the League of Women Voters is prioritizing this year, the Equal Rights Amendment to the New York State Constitution. Currently, we know that 26 states have state-level ERAs, including sex as a protected class, in the state constitution. New York State, kind of surprisingly, given the liberal bent, does not. On January 24th this year, the legislature passed the ERA in its second consecutive session, which now will bring the ERA to New Yorkers for ratification on the 2024 ballot. So the electorate is making the ultimate decision in order to codify the ERA into the state constitution. Quick question, are you feeling optimistic about its passage?
I'm feeling very optimistic. I think that people recognize, as you pointed out, New York State needs to put these protections into its state constitution. We've seen what happens when a court determines that a right is not constitutionally protected and just protected by law. The Constitution is a far stronger protection for all of the rights that we believe all of our residents have. So I'm optimistic, but we're going to have to work at it, just like we did with the last constitutional amendment that was on the Environmental Bond Act that was on. You know, George Latimer and the county spent a lot of time and energy convincing people it's worth voting for. We're going to have to do the same. I'm very confident that the majority of New Yorkers will adopt the Equal Rights Amendment in 2024 on the general election ballot.
Okay, thank you.
Well, as Nina mentioned, something that the League of Women Voters, certainly here in New Rochelle, is going to be trying to educate the voters on before the election. We're going to have a website with all kinds of information, and we're
wonderful.
Going to be pushing information at our voter registration drive, so everyone should be listening, keeping an ear out for that. And I think that brings us pretty much to the close of our hour. We want to thank you so much, Senator Mayer, for sharing your views and insights this morning. Our next show, well, it's been a pleasure having you. Our next show is going to be Wednesday, April 19th at 9 in the morning here on WVOX 1460. And in the meantime, I just want to remind everyone that we are going to be broadcasting all day on Friday in honor of St. Patrick's Day and in memory of William O'Shaughnessy at the Mirage Restaurant and Cafe at 690 North Avenue across from Iona College. We hope to see some of you then. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Home of free speech, continuing the legacy of Bill O'Shaughnessy, 1460 WVO.